Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, December 19th, 2010. This is episode 728. Enjoy.
Sometimes I just like to let the music play.
Hello, everybody. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And we're 1 week before Christmas. The holiday season is upon us. And I'm here today to help you choose a geek gift. We've got Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, coming up. He's going to be here at 33 after the hour. And we could talk about big screen TVs. That's always a good gift. Blu-ray players. We could talk about cell phones. Very personal gift, but maybe you know what the person in your life wants or likes. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number. 888-827-5536. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., you can use Skype out and call because it's a toll free number. It shouldn't cost you anything. 888-827-5536. Do you ever use a bookmarking tool of any kind? You know, to keep track of your bookmarks. Of course, on your browser, you probably do. And I think this is kind of a specialized application. But there's a site called Delicious. Used to be del.icio.us. I think that might have slowed its adoption. Yahoo bought it from Joshua Schachter, the guy who created it about, well, I think, 5 years ago, almost to the day. And they did a few things to improve it. Mostly, they just changed the URL to delicious.com, which is a little easier to remember. They didn't really change the software much. And 5 years later, they're saying, we're going to kill it, or we're going to sell it, or we don't want it anymore. And I think that's kind of sad. But maybe nobody uses it. I use it a lot. If you go to delicious.com/twit, that's my account name, because that's my network of podcasts is called TWiT, delicious.com/TWiT. You'll see that as the week goes by, this is how I use it. I've got little Delicious buttons on all my browsers, and if I see an interesting story, I'll snip a little paragraph from it. I'll press the button on my browser. I'll create an entry on Delicious, and I'll put some tags to reflect what the story is and what show I want to talk about it. You know, if it's the Tech Guy, I'll put TTG in there. And it's very handy for me. And then I can go to delicious.com. In fact, I do right before the show every week. And see what the big stories are. Handy. There's a lot of other additional features and so forth. But that's basically how it's used. And Yahoo, this is an example. I think Yahoo's kind of in trouble. Yahoo announced this week they laid off, 4% of their staff, and they announced at the all hands meeting in which they announced that we're gonna phase out or merge a number of products. And there was a slide on the screen which somebody snapped and of course post. Nothing's secret anymore. Nothing's secret. You could say this is a, look this to at an all hands meeting. This is a private. Don't tell anybody outside there. But that gets out immediately. And of course, you know, Yahoo was upset. They said, well, we wish people hadn't found out that way. Well, thank goodness we found out. It caused a kind of a mass exodus. Yahoo got very slow for a while as people exported their Delicious bookmarks to other sites. I decided to go to a site called Pinboard, PINBOARD.IN. Which is kind of was designed around Yahoo. It's like to be a better Yahoo, designed around Yahoo. It's got an interesting story, actually. It's not a free service. It's it says on the front page, welcome to Pinboard, social bookmarking for introverts. It's kind of anti-social, social bookmarking. And it says Pinboard is a low noise bookmarking site. That's where I kind of why I like Pinboard. That's why I use Pinboard. And then they have, I really love this. Should you switch from Delicious? We have arguments for and against. And you can read that and decide, well, this is for me or not. I switched, to be honest, before Delicious announced or Yahoo announced that the Delicious's demise was imminent. They have, part of the problem with Delicious is they could never make any money on it. Yahoo has a lot of properties. Flickr is a good example. It costs them money, tons of money, but can't really make them any money. And Delicious, they never were able to figure out how to make money on that. And one of the things I like about Pinboard, and it's actually one of the things that offends people, is that it's not free. But I like that because, you know, the reason Delicious is gone is because there was no money to be made. And Pinboard has a unique way of charging. Right now, it's $8.68 for life. And where does that number come from? Well, if you click the link, it says the sign-up fee helps discourage spammers and defray some of the costs of running the site. The fee is based on a formula, the number of users times 0.001 cents. So the earlier you join, the less you pay. So if I do the math, sounds like they've got, what, 86,000 users, something like that? I think that's a good idea. So if you charge for the cost of running your service, then you don't put, first of all, spammers aren't going to put anything on there because they don't want to pay $8 to do that, you know, when there's plenty of places they can get it for free. And you're kind of telling people, look, we're going to make sure the service survives. We have a business model. Oh, that's so non-internet, isn't it? A business model? A plan to make money? What? How dare you? We see sites go away all the time. Xmarks is a good example. I love X. Do you use Xmarks? Xmarks originally was a plugin for Firefox that synchronized your bookmarks. So, you know, this is different from a public bookmarking site. This is the bookmarks you've got on your browser. And by the way, once they got Firefox under their belt, they extended it to Safari and Explorer, you know, Internet Explorer and Chrome. You'd install this plugin, it would synchronize your bookmarks. Then they added synchronizing passwords. The thing was hideously useful. And they went out of business. Everybody used it. But it went out of business. Why? Well, because their business model didn't work. They had some sort of Fakatka idea that they will, there's something there. They would collect people's bookmarks and they would use it. They would do some sort of data mining, and it would never really happen. Despite the fact that hundreds of thousands of people used it, they said, we're going to pull the plug. Now, the good news is along comes a company called LastPass and buys it and saves it. Thank goodness. And I suppose the same thing will happen to Delicious, that some angel will come along and buy it, find some use for it, and perhaps find some way to make money. But it's interesting, isn't it, that this happened in the big internet bubble 10 years ago. But sites, there was such a land grab. There was such a gold rush. People just said, I'm going to start a business. I don't care how it makes money. I'm going to start a website. Pets.com is very famous. And that failed when they realized that sending kitty litter via mail cost more than the sand that was in the kitty litter, the clay. It just didn't make sense. Nobody would buy kitty litter via postal service. So they went out of business. I imagine we're about to see the same kind of thing. This all leads to the conversation, the question that a lot of people are asking, are we in another internet bubble? We were, the dot-com bubble burst in 2000, and it left a lot of empty, dead husks of companies, and a lot of people lost a lot of money. People had bought money in the stock market. You know, the difference is we didn't have the big stock market bubble this time around. There weren't all those initial public offerings. You know, remember when Netscape offered stock and it went through the roof? We have a few companies like Google that are, you know, Apple, that are, stock price is going up and up and up. And most of these companies like Xmarks and others are just really not, there's no stock price. There's no open market for it. So I think that bubble, that kind of collapse isn't going to happen. But we might be in a little bit of a mini bubble where there's just kind of this what is it they said, irrational exuberance? 8888 Ask Leo. Hey, let's talk about tech. You call me, I'll talk to you right after this. The Tech Guy, 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Let's talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater. I have to give you the whole list. 8888-ASK-LEO, actually home theater, our topic in just a few minutes. At 33 past the hour, Scott Wilkinson joins us to talk a little bit about big screen TVs and the like, but I'm here to help you right now with your holiday gift shopping or your technology. Aaron's on the line from Tampa, Florida, our first call of the day. Hey, Aaron, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing? Love your show every Sunday. I religiously listen to it.
Thank you.
I got sort of a TV question. I had purchased 5 years ago a Sony Grand Vega.
Used to be a great TV.
Right.
Yep.
The only thing is, I had a bulb put in when it was still under warranty, and maybe 3 weeks after that, the optical system went. My warranty ran out, and I have now little dots, blue dots, all over my TV.
Oh no!
Yeah, and I
take it when you
Sony.
Say when you say bulb, it's a projection, rear projection TV, I'd guess. Yes,
that's correct. That was in 2005. And yeah. Like I say, it was a 60-inch. I still have a great picture, but right in the center, blue is starting to come, little blue dots. And one on Sony's website, I'd like to hear from anybody else that had that problem. And I see they had a couple class actions that settled.
Oh, interesting. So there is an issue.
Yes, but now those issues are gone. Now, what I had spoke to Sony the other day, and they said to me, oh, we'll give you $200 towards a new TV, and you have to buy it from us.
It has to be a Sony, of course.
Oh, yes, and I think after that experience, I wanted your expertise. I'm going to be looking for a LED TV now.
Yeah, an LED, when they call them LEDs, it's actually a little bit of a misnomer. It's still an LCD TV, but it's LED backlit. And one of the advantages of that, you don't have to replace the bulb down the road. LEDs last a long time. I think, Sony's fine, but in fact, I know Scott Wilkinson will have weigh in on this in a few minutes, but he likes the Bravias. I have a Sony Bravia. Very nice. I'm a big fan, in my opinion, of the Samsungs. I think Samsung makes the best. Yeah, I really like Samsung LCDs, but I know Scott likes Sony just as well. Vizio, if you're looking for a lower price unit.
No, I thought my Sony would give me, at least 10 years, and I have all Sonys. I never had anything else, but for, to get 5 years out of a TV and it's ready
to. Disappointing, isn't it?
I'm going to try, I believe, Samsung.
I'll tell you though, For a long time, a TV lasts you 20 years, right? I mean, what would happen? And technology now changes so rapidly, even if the TV, I have a 20-year-old TV, I wouldn't dream of watching it. It's fine. It still works, but I wouldn't dream of watching it. And that's part of it. I think you'll notice, as good as that Grand Vega was, and those were great TVs, you're going to notice a huge improvement in clarity and brightness and resolution. It's going to almost look like I was watching, I have a Pioneer Plasma.
Right.
One of the last Kuros, and I was watching last night a 60-inch movie, and it was so realistic. It was actually kind of amazing.
Right.
And I really think that you will notice a big improvement.
And what about 3D now? I see most of the...
I don't... Now, here's where Scott and I diverge. I think 3D is a gimmick. I don't recommend it. It can cost as much as $1,000 more. I don't think you'll ever use it. You have to wear glasses to watch it. Everybody who's watching it has to wear glasses. The glasses are $150. Some of these TVs come with one pair of glasses. Oh, that's sociable.
Right.
Go away. I'm watching TV right now. You got to buy more glasses. That's crazy. It's crazy. And there's not a lot of 3D content. I don't think, you know, maybe there will be. Have you ever seen a movie in 3D in the theater?
No. No.
Me neither.
It frightens me because it's just, I don't know. As far as with all this technology just coming out, I don't know how long.
It's going to, look, here's my opinion on 3D. What happened? Two things. First of all, everybody bought an HD TV, and then Sony and Pioneer and Panasonic and LG and Samsung said, well, now how are we going to get them back in the store? We won't see them for another 10 years. We need to make some money. So they came up with something new that makes you presumably want to buy a TV. And of course, 3D is perfect because the movie industry is saying, oh, 3D, 3D. You know, it's funny. The movie industry has a completely different reason for doing 3D. They want to get you in the theater. They wanted to do something that you couldn't see on your TV.
Right.
I think it's a gimmick in both places. I don't like 3D that much, but I do think if you're in a big screen movie environment and that's not so bad. I don't know. But now that's just me, and I know there are plenty of people who think 3D is the greatest thing since sliced bread. I can make arguments right and left, and you know, but in my opinion, it's a gimmick, and I wouldn't go crazy over it. And if you feel the same, if you kind of inclined to feel the same way, I'd go that way.
Because I noticed more in my Bright House, I got some literature from them that they're going to start to have some 3D TV, if your TV is.
Right.
$10 bill more a month if you want to
watch
it.
Now, remember, the same thing happened with HD. There was no HD content.
Yes.
And they charge you more for HD content. But in my opinion, HD is well worth it. Higher resolution is more realistic. And in fact, I wish the industry had gone towards higher resolutions, not towards 3D. But that's just my opinion. Scott disagrees, and he's going to be on in a few minutes, and I'll let him explain why 3D is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Okay, have a great day.
Thanks, Aaron. You'll enjoy your new TV, and I would get a Samsung. I'll let Scott discuss the different model numbers. Samsung does make 3D. In fact, my business partner at Twit just went out. She bought a TV. She bought a 3D at Scott's suggestion, and the reason she bought the 3D TV is she said, and this might be true, and I'll ask Scott, that she doesn't care about the 3D so much, although she's a big football fan, and I think sports in 3D might be kind of cool. She said the best TVs, the high-end TVs now are the 3D TVs. So she wanted the best TV, and it happened to be that she had to get 3D. I just don't see it. And here's my fear, and there's certainly proof of, you know, evidence of this. These fads, like laser discs, remember them? I do too, because I bought a lot of them and I had a LaserDisc player. HD, you know, DVD HD, SACD, DVD. We've seen 100 fads come through the consumer electronics industry, and you spend money on this stuff and then they kill it 3 years later and you're stuck with a bunch of stuff you can't use. I have a 6-foot shelf of DVDs in HD DVD format, but it died. Blu-ray one. How many times have we seen that? How many times? So that's why I'm always, you know, if the industry says 3D, I'm not going to march in lockstep to that one. If they're, you know, if you want to spend and you want to get the best TV and the reviewers and the consensus is, and I think Scott will say this, that the best TVs are also the 3D TVs. Okay. And you get 3D kind of, you know, thrown in, right? Okay. Pair of glasses. I don't know. You know, it's funny because you'd think I'm the tech guy. I'm going to embrace all new technologies, and I certainly do love technology. But every once in a while, you know, I'll see stuff, and I say, no, I don't think that's it. FaceTime, Apple's FaceTime on the iPhone. I don't get it. I don't use it. I don't know anybody does. It's a gimmick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We're talking high-tech as we do every week at this time. And, of course, we couldn't talk about home theater without getting this cat on. He is the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine at ultimateavmag.com. He's a columnist at HomeTheaterMag.com. He's been covering home theater and big screen TVs for years. He knows his stuff. Mr. Scott Wilkinson, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey!
The crowd goes wild.
I need
a laugh and applause track.
There you go.
So, hey, Scott. So you, I'm sure, heard the conversation I had with Aaron moments ago.
I did. Yeah.
First of all, what about those blue dots? Do you know anything about that with the Grand Vegas? That's terrible.
I don't know about the blue dots. I do know that Sony rear projection TVs based on SXRD, which was their last couple of generations, suffered from what was called the green blob problem.
Maybe that's it.
It could. What he was describing didn't sound like it. It was not little blue dots. It was big green blobs.
Okay.
And there was a problem with that. But shortly thereafter, they discontinued rear projection TVs, and so the problem kind of went away.
Right.
So,
I'm
kind of discouraged that TVs don't last longer now, and I don't think there are any TVs that are going to last 20 years anymore. I mean,
right.
I remember having a TV for 20 years, and
sure, but that's long gone.
That's long gone.
Long
I think
gone.
We're not going to see that anymore.
Yeah.
So your recommendations were good.
Samsung, if he's going to buy an LED backlit LCD?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They make very good ones. Sony also makes very good ones. I don't think any of them are going to last 20 years, though. So you should sort of
be aware
of that expectation.
Is that because, first of all, it's the technology. 20 years from now, we'll probably have 4K screens. We'll have all sorts of new technology.
Maybe holography. Who knows?
Yeah. And they're not going to wear out, though, in that fast, are they?
Well,
they might.
Yeah.
Huh?
I mean, this guy had a problem after 5 years, right? And I hate to say it, but manufacturers might very well be, and I don't have any evidence to support this, might very well be. Planning for those TVs not to last that long. And so
I hope that's not the case.
I hope that's not the case, too. I really do. But
regardless, even if it doesn't wear out, you really are going to want a better TV in probably 10 years, I would guess.
Yeah, I would think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right.
So what about this issue of 3D? Because, maybe I mischaracterized your position, but certainly you're more of a fan of 3D than I.
Yes, I am. I have become a little more ambivalent about it lately, particularly on smaller screens. Because when you're watching 3D at home on a flat panel TV, you're usually sitting too far away too far away for 3D. And you can see in your peripheral vision some stuff around the TV that's in real 3D, that is in reality.
And there is a difference, isn't there, between real 3D, like real life and this kind of pseudo 3D. That's one of my problems, is that it isn't really 3D.
That's correct. Now, if you go to the movies, I'm a big fan of 3D in the commercial cinema.
Yeah, yeah. I don't dislike that. I thought Avatar was pretty cool.
Avatar was great. Tron was great. I saw.
Oh, you
Tron.
Saw Tron.
I did. In fact, I saw a screening on Wednesday night, two nights before it actually was released to the public.
Did you see the IMAX version?
No, that was at Disney Studios.
Okay.
Dolby 3D with a single projector. And it did look a little dim, as single projection 3D does. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go see it again in IMAX, because IMAX uses two projectors, so they throw a lot of light on the screen. And the screen is huge. And that's one of the keys. That plus enough light is two of the keys.
For good 3D.
Precisely.
You can't have any peripheral vision, for one thing.
You can't have stuff in the peripheral vision that is in real 3D as opposed to stereoscopic 3D.
Okay.
Now, I will say that you were correct in saying that 3D is, I think, in terms of 3D TV, it's becoming simply another feature of premium TVs. So that in the future, if you buy a premium TV, one of a company's higher end TVs, it's going to have 3D capability.
it just because I don't want to say it'll come along for the ride because you are paying for it. It's not like it's free.
Well, no, it's not free. But again, the economy of scale is going to make it not be very much. It's not going to represent very much of the set.
In some cases, it's $1,000 more for the 3D version of a TV.
Well, that's because of it's new now. It's brand new technology.
So you think it in the long run, maybe a few hundred dollars. Well, what is the differential between, say, Samsung's, affordable LED backlit LCD and their top of the line? A, what's the price differential? And B, aside from 3D, what is the difference in quality?
The price differential, I'd have to do some research on. Okay. I can't say that off the top of my head.
Okay.
But
it strikes me as it's around 1,000 or more. I mean, it's a significant difference.
I'm not sure about that. You know, that's a very good question that I'll have to research and post a blog about.
Okay.
But in terms of picture quality, you are going to get a better picture quality with a 3D set, even in 2D mode, which is why I recommended to Lisa there in your office to get the Panasonic VT25, which is a fabulous 3D set.
It's
a plasma, yes. But it's also probably the best plasma of any plasma out there currently available, not including Pioneer Kuro, which is not available anymore.
Right. So that makes sense. And now in her case, I think she might watch football in 3D and she probably will enjoy that.
Probably will. She's a big 49er. She's getting a pretty large TV too. It's a 58, as I recall.
Oh man. That's good. So I want to see that. That sounds pretty nice.
Yeah. You sit close enough to that with 3D and you're not going to see anything in your peripheral vision and it's going to look great.
All right, so as long as we're talking, Scott Wilkinson is here from the Ultimate AV Magazine. Do you want to I'm going to ask all questions today.
But, that's fine.
Because I don't know why, but I am. Anything you want to plug? You still have? Do you have a poll going on right now?
Well, I got a poll this week. Yes, thank you very much. The poll this week is: how do you receive your TV mostly? By terrestrial over the air, cable, satellite, or internet? I'm particularly interested in knowing how many people primarily get their TV online, which is the newest way, obviously, of getting TV. It releases you from Must See Thursday.
Right.
Right. There's no scheduling. You just go online and you get the show you want and you watch it.
Well, I was talking about that movie that I watched last night. It was an Amazon HD rental on a Roku. And I was surprised. I mean, it looked, it was probably not more than 720p, but it looked really good. And the thing that I thought is interesting, and somebody's confirmed this in the chat room, is that it looked like it was in HDR. And I think it was. Apparently, they did some processing to some of the videos so that it was hyper-realistic with this high dynamic range.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, we've seen this before. It's very interesting. I'm starting to see in films that techniques that photographers have been using for still images are starting to migrate into films. Remember in The Social Network, the Facebook movie, they used a technique called tilt shift during the Oxford boat races. Mm-hmm. And it's a still technology that makes it has a really neat effect, and they used it tilt shift in the video, and it looked great. And we're starting to see people do HDR video, and it's kind of amazing looking.
You know, I have to
you'll have to look.
Yeah. I have to look for that now. Yeah, range is great, and on your Kuro, it should look amazing.
It did,
because the Kuro has that high dynamic range. It has that low deep black.
Yeah.
And it should look fantastic.
Well, so I'm even though it was only 720p, it's jumped out at me.
Yeah,
I was looking at it. In fact, my wife, who is not, looking for anything like that, said, "Whoa, what's going on there? It looks really good, really real, and I think it's HDR."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm very interested to hear that 720p, if that's what it was, looked that good. Downloaded content looked that good.
Yeah, I have to get the Blu-ray.
Comparing that with Blu-ray would be very interesting.
It was surprisingly good. I don't know if Amazon does higher quality or what's going on. The movie was Ghost Town, I should mention. Not the best in the world. Ricky Gervais, though, I'm a big fan of him. All right, hold on, Scott. We'll do a little more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Carbonite.com. Back it up to get it back. And when you do, do it right with Carbonite. Try it free right now for 2 weeks. at Carmenite.com. Use the offer code Leo. Scott Wilkinson is here. Scott is the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine at ultimateavmag.com and Home Theater Magazine, columnist, HomeTheaterMag.com, joins us every week to talk home theater. And I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You were starting to tell us about the new Tron movie.
Yeah.
Some interesting technology there. I mean, they unaged Jeff Bridges to be...
That was astonishing. That was really quite amazing. And they used the same technology that they did to age Brad Pitt, I think it was, in Benjamin Button.
Right.
But they did it in the opposite direction, obviously, here. Yeah. And I thought it looked great myself. Oh, I've read some reviews that said, nah, he looked kind of plastic. Well, maybe so.
Well, what a surprise.
You know, maybe so. But, you know, he's a program in a computer-generated
right.
environment.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. Visually, this movie is stunning. I mean, interestingly, now, it's advertised as a 3D movie, which it is, but it also has a lot of 2D in it. And there was a note at the beginning of the movie that said, you will see some scenes in 2D and some scenes in 3D. Leave your glasses on the whole time.
Oh, interesting. Because the last time I saw a movie that did that, it was Superman or Batman. It was one of those mans. And they put a little icon on the screen and okay, now put on the glasses. And then it would go off and then you take off the glasses. And I thought,
that's
what a great way to take me out of the movie.
Yeah.
And that's when I really started hating 3D. It's like... Clearly, these people care more about the effect than about the movie. And I'm interested in the movie, the story.
Right. Well, in this case, they told you to keep the glasses on the whole time. And that was the way to do it. And interestingly, the scenes in the, quote, real world were mostly in 2D. And the scenes in what's called the grid, the computer-generated world that they go to, were in 3D. So
that makes
sense. This was actually kind of interesting. It reminded me of The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
Where Kansas was in sepia tone and Oz was in full Technicolor.
Right.
So they were using a similar sort of idea or approach here. And I thought it was pretty effective.
See, there's a case where it supports the plot and that I have no problem with it.
Yeah, exactly right. It was momentarily distracting, you know, when all of a sudden you were looking at 2D and it kind of looked normal. And then you're looking at 3D and you go, whoa.
Ooh, hey. Yeah.
So... But I think it was fairly effective in support of the story. Now, is the film any good? Is the story any good? I have to say I was a little disappointed in that.
Really? You had expectations?
Yeah. Well, now,
how can you be disappointed if you expect nothing?
I'm a fan of the original Tron.
Oh, okay. Well, there's your problem.
A, because I'm a geek, and B, my sister actually worked on it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Okay, never mind. Yeah, what a great movie.
No, I have some familial loyalty
in
that regard.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah.
You know, I was kind of hoping that they would do something interesting with the story. And the story, the basic idea, is interesting. It's I think it's an interesting sequel to the original.
Mm-hmm.
But the dialogue is weak, and the acting is overly melodramatic, and the plot is actually pretty slow-moving. Despite all of the, you know, light cycle chases.
Sounds like it's a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Get it on Blu-ray.
All absolutely. Right. I mean, going to see it in IMAX particularly, I think would be great.
Yeah.
And the visuals, the 3D visuals and the computer-generated visuals are stunning and worth the price of admission, in my opinion, just to go see that and go, wow,
right. That
looks so cool.
Right.
But don't go expecting a great movie because it ain't.
All right. A couple more questions for you. And I know this is we're kind of going to cover old ground. But, you know, people, this is the time when people are deciding, you know, what TV
Absolutely.
To get,
sure.
You know, after Christmas. If they didn't get the TV they want, then they go out and buy it for themselves and that
right,
kind of
right.
thing. I think, you know, the Super Bowl is coming up next month. And I think there are a lot of people who are looking at big screen. This is probably the season to buy a big screen TV. Let me ask you, so you do like LED backlit LCDs. Do you prefer them to plasma? Does it matter?
No. It depends on the situation. I myself prefer plasma because it has better motion detail,
right.
usually deeper blacks, although LEDs are now narrowing that gap to near invisibility. But bright room. If you're going to do super party, you're going to have a lot of light on in the room. It's going to be during the day, people walking around. And so an LED backlit LCD will probably be your best choice for that.
Do you like the 120 hertz? If we're going to go LED, backlit LCD. Do you like the extra frame rate stuff?
Yeah, here is a real point of contention that I'm going to actually use as a poll question one of these days on my website, which is we have 120 hertz or 240 hertz frame rate, and it gets you nothing. It does nothing to improve the picture unless you turn on what is called frame interpolation.
Okay.
And what that is the TV taking two consecutive frames that are coming in and saying, what are the moving objects? Okay, this is football is moving, obviously. And it's here in this frame and there in that frame. Where would it be in the intervening frames if there were intervening frames? And then it creates those frames and puts that football in those places. So that makes the image sharper. The image of the football as it's moving makes it quite a bit sharper, but it introduces a side effect called the soap opera effect, which makes, and what it does is it makes the video, the image look like it was shot on video, like a soap opera. Now, with video-originated material, this is not as bad a problem as it is with movies. With movies, which were shot at 24 frames per second, all of a sudden you have more frames than were originally shot, and it really takes on this soap opera-y effect. And
so turn it off for movies, but maybe for sports.
Maybe for sports, turn it on. Turn exactly. It on. Now, it's in your picture menu. It's in the TV's picture menu, probably under what's called an advanced menu, and that scares a lot of people away. And I say, don't be scared, because you can't damage anything. There's always a reset button.
Right.
You can always hit the reset button and take it back to the factory default, and you're fine. But I do encourage you to go in and play with it and see if it bothers you. Most videophiles, it bothers a lot. It doesn't bother me that much, and I consider myself a videophile. I'm very conscious of video quality. But this particular case, I'm willing to live with the soap opera effect because of the sharper motion,
right,
which really makes a difference to me. So yes, and most LED TVs, I should say, you were exactly correct when you said it's a bit of a misnomer. It's really an LED illuminated or backlit LCD TV. It's still an LCD TV. It's just using an LED for a backlight instead of the fluorescent lights that we used to use.
I want to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Jim in Riverside, who wants to get his mom a Blu-ray, but wants to know what about the differences in cables. Because you got HDMI 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.8, 1.8.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what the difference is. Before we do that, though, let me talk a little bit about our friends at ESET, who make the best, the best antivirus in the world. A must-have. It's called Nod32. Editor's Choice from CNET this year gave it 5 out of 5 stars. The prestigious independent virus bulletin said Nod32 hasn't missed a virus in the wild for a decade. That's pretty good. I love it. Because it doesn't slow me down. It doesn't get in the way. It just does its job. And when I say it protects you not just from viruses, but from worms, trojans, spyware, adware, phishing scams, and the worst beasties of all, the rootkits. Nod32's advanced heuristics detects virus-like activity and stops it cold even before the signatures are out there. This thing is amazing. Try it free for 30 days and you tell me. Go to eset.com/LEO. ESET.com/Leo or call 866-935-ESET. 866-935-ESET. If you use Windows, you need Nod32. Jim, Riverside, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call and happy holidays to everybody.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. Here's my dilemma. My mom's 86, and she's been looking at a tube television pretty much since they've been invented. I wanted to experience the HDTV, so I went out and got a new HD television. I'm shopping for a decent Blu-ray DVD player, and I've talked to a cable company and getting her package turned over to HD.
Good.
Surprise for her. But here's my dilemma. I'm looking for cables, and I'm seeing a 3-foot cable go from anywhere from $30 for 3 feet to $7 for 3 feet, and it's puzzling. So I was wondering if you could straighten.
You could spend more. Monster sells a $250 HDMI cable. $250.
That's not going to happen.
Scott, back me up on this, but in my opinion, no better than the $3 cable.
That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah.
It's exactly the same.
Wow.
As long as the cable is capable of carrying the bandwidth,
right?
And that is determined mostly by whether or not it's certified by a concern called SimPlay.
S-I-M-P-L-A-Y,
correct. SimPlay.
I saw a research study that did say that when you get to the longer cables, it makes a difference.
That's true.
Like 20 foot or something. But for standard 6 foot cable, you're fine with a cheap
Absolutely
one. Monoprice.com.
Right.
Scott Wilkinson, Ultimate AV Magazine. Thanks for joining us. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my friends at Squarespace.com. It's a great way to make a professional-looking website simply, easily, and affordably. If you haven't visited Squarespace.com, try it. And when you do, use the coupon code TECHGUY. You can try it free for 2 weeks and get 10% off for the life of your account at Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Back to the phones we go at 888-88-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Peter is in Danville, California, listening to the great KGO, I would guess. Hey, Peter.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of comments. I wish I could hear you, your entire show in the Bay Area. And also,
talk to KGO, Jack Swanson, who's a great friend and I really love. But and it's been now 3 years.
Yeah.
He was really reluctant to take. I do 6 hours. I do 3 hours on Saturday and 3 hours on Sunday. KGO just takes 2 hours. It's great. I'm thrilled that I'm not complaining. I'm thrilled that they take it. It's a huge station. It's the station in the Bay Area. Yeah. And we do make it available via podcast, via the internet, and via video as well. So, after KGO leaves, you can always watch us on the internet.
Yeah. Also, I do miss the Web Wanderer.
The Web Wanderer. Oh, that goes back away. I miss him, too. I don't know whatever happened to him. We had that great song, and he would give it. Now, this was in the earliest days of the website. This was back when I was on KSFO in San Francisco.
Right.
And this was probably 92, 93. So we really did need Vern, and Vern would come on, and we really did need somebody to talk about what cool websites. Nowadays, there's so many, and there's so many ways to find websites, probably the Web Wanderer wouldn't be quite as useful.
Hmm.
But he did a great job. Isn't that funny? I mean, that's how long ago that was.
Right.
Early 90s. And the web was something brand new.
Right. Anyway, my problem is with Windows Live Mail 2011. Whenever I get a message with some pictures attached, or actually in the body of the text,
yeah,
and I try to forward it, I get an error message that one or more of the pictures could not be found, and then when I send it, it doesn't show the pictures. It just shows like boxes where the pictures were.
Now, right. This is a security feature.
Oh.
Attachments are risky, and Microsoft decided a few years ago to change the default behaviors of all of its email programs not to allow attachments. I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, I was always saying, don't open attachments, because that was the primary vector for viruses. It isn't anymore, by the way.
Right.
I mean, you still can get a virus by an attachment, but most likely you're going to get it from the web itself these days.
These are not attachments. They're in the body of the...
That's an attachment.
Even though it
looks like it's in the body just because the mail program displays it that way.
No.
But in fact, what's going on is you get an email with an attached JPEG file.
So it's
as a convenience, they render the JPEG in the email so you can see it in the viewer.
Hmm.
But I think what will happen is, you need to look in your settings. It's going to be in the security settings. It might be buried fairly deep.
Oh.
And you can say allow attachments and allow inline attachments. And your correspondents will have to do the same. You can't do it for them. Each and every user has to do that.
Well, that's what I looked through that, and I didn't see anything like that.
You know, I haven't looked at live mail lately, and maybe that they have completely turned it off.
Yeah, because if I forward it as an attachment, the email, it's right there.
Yeah. So it's inline attachments you want to turn on.
Okay. Well, all right. I'll try to find that.
I'm going to have to do some searching. Windows Live inline attachments. How to disable inline display of attachments. How to insert an inline attachment. Yeah, I think that now that you know the phrase inline attachment, that's what you're seeing.
Okay.
That's where you're going to look. Zephyr tells me, and this is kind of a good way to do it, probably the best way to do it, is not to enable globally, but to mark a sender as safe. So the people who are in your address book, mark them safe. It's okay for me to get attachments from them. And that's kind of the smart way to do it. And then live mail will block attachments, block inline images from people that you doesn't know. And there's usually a button or somewhere where you could say, just, you know, show the images. It's still risky. It's not like it's not risky anymore. It's just that most viruses no longer propagate through email attachments because we wised up and companies like Microsoft turned off automatic attachments, things like that. So the virus, this is what happens. The virus authors said, we need a new vector. How else can we do? And what they do now is actually a lot more nefarious. They embed, these are called exploits, by the way. It's an exploit when it takes advantage of a flaw in your security or your operating system to infect your system. That's called an exploit. They're exploiting your system. And you can buy kits, exploit kits now. You go to the, there are many websites, $50, hundreds and hundreds of exploits in a form that you can put on a web page. They're invisible. They're on the web page. Sometimes it's through a PDF. That's a very common one these days because of flaws in Adobe Reader. Sometimes it's in a hacked Flash file because of flaws in Adobe Flash. Sometimes it's PHP or JavaScript that takes advantage of holes in Windows itself. The idea for the bad guy is that you go to a website that looks completely innocuous and without your knowledge, without any warning, without even, you know, any visible sign, your system is infected. The exploit takes over. So you go to these bad websites and everything seems completely normal. Behind the scenes, scripts are running, probing at weaknesses in your system. And when it finds one, it installs the malware. And it's there. It's done. And you can go to another site. It can take a second or less. You go to another site, but it doesn't matter. Now you're done. Even more nefarious, now they're starting to embed these things in banner ads. And since a number of systems, ad systems, allow kind of anonymous purchases, this has happened on MySpace. It's happened on Facebook. It's happened with Google ads. The bad guy poses as a legitimate buyer, buys ads on a site. The ad itself contains these exploit code, whether it's JavaScript, Flash, PDF, and you visit what is absolutely a real legitimate site with a banner ad on it. It's not the site that's infecting you now, it's the banner ad. It's pretty nasty out there. But the argument and the way to protect yourself, this is the argument for updating. The way to protect yourself is to update regularly. Anytime these exploits are discovered by the good guys, the companies that make the software patch it. That's why when Windows Update happens and you get those critical updates every second Tuesday, Patch Tuesday we call it, you absolutely need to install those right away. Those fix patches of those patch exploits, holes in the operating system. The problem is, again, virus authors notice that Microsoft's doing a pretty good job these days of patching exploits. So where do they go? Well, they look at other companies, third parties. And that's the new way we get infected is through things like Adobe products that aren't updated as often. Not necessarily through Adobe's fault, but do you make a point of going through all your software and updating it regularly? Nobody does. You have hundreds, maybe thousands of programs on your system, and then there's no centralized way to do that. So the bad guys know, And since everybody has Reader and everybody has Flash, it's the first place they went. Adobe Now does have an updater and updates much more regularly. And if you haven't updated Flash lately, you really should. If you haven't updated Adobe Reader lately, you absolutely must. In fact, while you're at it, go into the settings on Adobe Reader, and there's two settings you want to turn off. One is JavaScript. There's no need for JavaScript in a PDF file, unless you're, you know, your company's using it, and you know, you'll know. And turn off the ability to launch third-party applications from a PDF. Turn that off. That's very dangerous. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my good friends at Stamps.com. Why wait in line at the post office? Oh, my goodness. When you can print out your own legal U.S. postage right from your Windows computer and your printer. No special ink needed. No special postage meter. Just Stamps.com. For a no-risk trial offer, including a $100 bonus and $45 free postage, go to Stamps.com and use the offer code Leo. Stamps.com. Dave's all excited about my Chromium CR48 Chrome OS notebook. I pulled it out. I haven't really used it that much. It's kind of, this is the Google operating system. The Google now has two operating systems. They have Android, which is rapidly becoming one of the most popular operating systems in the world. According to Google, almost 9 million new users every month. That's if that keeps up, and I think it is slowing down, but that's like 100 million new users a year. That's Windows territory, baby. That's, we're talking some pretty big numbers. But they have an operating system that's designed for netbooks and computers with keyboards called Chrome OS. It's very interesting. It's very simple. It's just a browser. That's it. Just a browser. And they have the Chrome OS store where you can go and you can buy well, they call them apps to run in the browser, but really they're just websites to run in the browser based on HTML5. So they're a little more capable than, you know, websites, but there's an audio editor, picture editor, all sorts of stuff. Some of them are free. Some of them are paid. I don't think you're going to see Angry Birds in there. I don't know if you could do Angry Birds in HTML5. Maybe you can. But the idea behind this, I guess, and, you know, there's definitely some discussion about whether this has any merit at all, this idea of a very, very simple computer, which is basically just a browser. There would be some advantages. One, you could make a really cheap computer. Two, and most importantly, you can make it very secure. And Google has done that. The system files can't be modified. The boot files can't be modified without the system knowing about it and fixing it. So, we were talking about bad guys. You really don't have to worry. Because the bad guy can't change the operating system. It's protected. And it's also something called sandboxed. So Google has built a PDF viewer into Chrome. You don't need Adobe Reader. And when you run that viewer, it's run inside a sandbox. It can't modify anything outside of that sandbox. So it's, in theory, safe as well. Bad guys have to modify your system, really, so that they, you know, their malware runs every time you run the system. And Google's saying, we're going to make this so hardened that nobody will be able to modify it. And then, so you can get an inexpensive netbook that does most of what anybody would want to do, I guess, since the browser, you know, is email and surfing and buying online. And in a very, very secure fashion. So that's Google's theory. Some say, this is history. This ain't going anywhere. I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to see. It's a, you know, I've got one. Google sent me a review unit, and I use it. You get 8 hours battery life. That's pretty good. But I still like I like my actual laptop a little bit better because it's got other stuff on it. And, it could do other stuff. Lewis, Hollywood, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Lewis.
Hi. Happy holidays, Leo.
Happy holidays to you.
First of all, will you please stop Dvorak's whining and give the poor man a MacBook Air?
That's $1,000. John C. Dvorak is one of our hosts. He does a number of shows of his own. He also is a regular on one of my shows, This Week in Tech, has been begging me for a MacBook Air ever since he saw mine. That's $1,000, although I have to say it's $1,000 well spent. The 11-inch MacBook Air is so light and thin. And
I think well spent if it shuts him up.
Well, obviously that's his strategy. He's going to whine until I give it to him.
Weeks ago, Reed Hastings of Netflix talked about how the iPad hadn't made a significant dent into their streaming.
Yeah.
And you and Sarah Lane.
He said basically none of the people aren't watching movies on the mobile versions of Netflix.
Right. And you
they are it's been good for Netflix in terms of getting more subscribers, but they're not so much watching movies on these devices.
Right. And when you and Sarah Lane talked about it and were trying to figure out why, I think you left out the main culprit, which is AT&T and their draconian data contracts.
That's true. I mean, it costs you money. If you have a 2 gigabyte a month data plan for $25, that's about two movies.
Yeah. You're going to use up quick. So unless you spend all day at a noisy, overpriced coffee shop, or you have a standing boss who's letting going to let you watch television, I had a thought when I first heard that AT&T had pulled that bait and switch back in April, where after a month of offering unlimited contracts,
right. Went
to 2 gig. I thought, the guys at Sling and Netflix must be tearing their hairs out, because if you're not hooked into Wi-Fi, you're just throwing all that data away.
And yet, I think that a lot, the Sling player on the iPad and the Netflix player on the iPad are great. And if you have Wi-Fi and it's not costing you anything, and that could be in a hotel, that could be at home. You're right. I mean, I wonder. I have friends at Sling. In fact, my cousin is one of the guys over there, and I really wonder if how they feel about it. Maybe I could ask Dave. Hey, David, just between us kids, what do you think about that?
Yeah.
Everybody, look, AT&T has become the whipping boy for everybody who owns an iPhone and an iPad. I mean, everybody hates AT&T. It's only a matter of time before Verizon gets their hands at least on the iPhone.
Well, and they're offering the iPad, but again, you got to buy the separate.
Right, and theirs is 5 gigs. I think a good solution is Clearwire, which is 4G. If you're in a 4G area, Clearwire area, get that. Clear has a Clear Spot, which is like the MiFi. It's a wireless hotspot, and it's truly, at least for now, truly unlimited. But none of these guys are going to stay unlimited because of things like this. It's too easy to use hundreds of gigabytes a month by watching movies.
Your argument has always been the best, which is bits is bits. Why?
I agree.
5 gig costs more than 4 gig, and why do you have to pay extra when you go to 6 gig?
Well, or at least offer a tier of unlimited.
Yeah.
If it costs you, okay, I understand. This is really the problem, and that mobile's a little different than home. These mobile carriers have to backhaul all the data that you're using on a given cell tower. They have to make sure that they have a backhaul to each and every cell tower. So it costs a lot of money for them to provide all of that data bandwidth. But boy, we're seeing it. In fact, we're seeing it with Android. The latest stat I saw is that people with Android phones actually use more bandwidth than iPhone owners. So we're all. This has to be, it's great. We suddenly, you have these little devices in your pocket. You can watch movies. You can watch TV. You can surf. I mean, they're really full-fledged, full-bore computers in your pocket with great screens, or the iPad, maybe not in your pocket, with great screens. And we're all, look how many iPads they've sold now, something like 8 or 9 million.
And they're just being, I think the interesting industry is hobbling itself and the manufacturers of the hardware by this. They got to figure out a different way.
Yes. Google made this very kind of stunning concession when it made a policy deal with Verizon. Google said, okay, we understand mobile's different, so what Google told Congress and the FCC is, yes, preserve independence, preserve net neutrality on the landlines, but when it comes to mobile, you're going to have to let the carriers do what they want. And I just disagree with it, Lewis, but I don't know what the solution is. Hey, thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my friends at Citrix. They make GoToAssist Express a great way to do remote support if you're in the business. You should check it out. 30 days free right now at gotoassist.com/Leo. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. My phone number, 888-827-5536. Translates out to 888-ASK-LEO. Jose, Windsor, California, just up the road a piece. Hey, Jose, Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo, thanks a lot for taking my call.
Happy holidays.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
Yeah. Hey, real quickly, I've got two quick questions. One is I need a recommendation on the Zoom Q3 HD camera.
Okay.
I currently have the flip.
Yeah, I mean, this is where Zoom really excels is in audio quality.
And that's what I'm, why I'm considering it.
Yeah, now I don't have a Q3 HD. Are they shipping it now? Because I do want to get one, and as soon as they start shipping, I will buy one.
I'm under the impression that it's available now.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah, because I saw the announcement of this, and I thought, this is awesome. So Zoom is best known for its handy little recorder, audio-only recorder, that has very good microphones and the ability to plug in high-end microphones. And what they've done is they've looked at the success of Flip and Kodak and frankly, most smartphones, and they've put in a 1080p video recorder as well as this high-end audio. Audio is so important. I think people ignore the importance of audio and video. It really is important. So if you get great stereo audio and they claim full HD, that's pretty good. Now, I have to tell you, there's no way it's true 1080p. I'll have to look at the specs, but most of the time when these small devices claim 1080p, their chip itself cannot do 1080 lines of resolution. That's what true 1080p would be, a native chip that can do 1920 by 1080. Most of the time, the chip is not that high resolution. They upscale it.
Well, let me ask you something. Looking back at their H4N, I was a little bit disappointed that the Q3 doesn't have that external.
Yes, you're right. You have to use their built-in capsule mics.
Correct. So, would there be another option? Because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get a small portable camera where I can make videos, instructional videos for my website.
If you want to use like real microphones or lav mics or a boom mic, you know, you want to use fancier microphones, you're going to buy a camcorder.
Okay.
And we purchased, I mean, and you're going to spend a few $1,000. These are prosumer at the very least level camcorders that have XLR jacks for real microphones.
Well, that's what I wanted to avoid.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Another way to go is, and there are a number of good DSLRs that shoot superb, true high def video. And have mini jack connectors for the mic. In fact,
mics.
Yeah, and then if you have a mini, in fact, I'll be honest with you. If you want to use an external mic, the Kodak ZI-8 might be a better choice. It has a mini jack for the microphone. You go out and you get a thing called a Beachtek, BEACHTEK. It's about $100. It takes XLR. I should explain for people who are listening that professional grade microphones don't plug in via phono plug or mini jack. They plug in via this weird, they call them DIN plugs. They're odd-looking plugs, XLR jacks. And if you want to use real professional mics, you need to have that kind of connector. And you need to also, in many cases, have phantom power, which means there's a little bit of power coming out of that jack to power the condenser mic. So you need a device that does that. The Beachtek will do that. You put batteries in it. It supplies phantom power. It has two XLR jacks. And then it goes to, believe it or not, to a mini jack. So it provides an interface for professional microphones. And then you can use wired mics, or you can use a Sennheiser or other companies' wireless system to plug into that and then have wireless mics out there.
Okay, so what was the Kodak model number?
That's the ZI-8. Now, that's a very nice, I have to say, that's a very nice choice. And you could even get, you know, I have the Rode makes a stereo mic that's designed for these SLR cameras. I have it that it sits on top of the camera in the hot shoe and has a mini jack that plugs into the SLR. I use it on my 5D Mark II, my Canon, and it gives you very good sound. It's not quite a shotgun, but it gives you much better sound than the built-in mics on these cameras.
Oh, great. great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So there are if you have the money, Jose, you know, you're just up the road a piece. Come down to the Twit Cottage and I'll show you what we do. We have a lot of different setups, including a high-end Sony CineAlta EX1 that has XLR jacks. That's, I think, a $6,000 or $7,000 camera. We have a couple of $2,000 JVC cameras that also have XLR jacks. And we have a Beach Tech, which we use for other devices. But you're absolutely right. If you want flexibility in audio, it's not enough just to have good mics built into the recorder. Now, I have to say, I'm kind of excited. Nevertheless, I'm kind of excited. Zoom does make good audio devices. And the Q3 HD is basically the size of a ZI-8 or a flip cam with these kind of better microphone on top of them. However, if you want to have handheld mics or shotgun mic or a lapel mic for your talent, for the people on the camera, then obviously you're gonna want something a little different. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if down the road Zoom makes something like that as well. It's just, it would be bulkier. It has to be. This is pretty tiny. You could put this in your breast pocket. I'm very intrigued. I think really, though, the interesting thing is people are less and less buying standalone video recording devices because all point-and-shoot cameras now shoot good quality, really good quality 720p high-def video. And, if you spent some money on a high-end digital SLR like the Canon 5D Mark II, you've got something good enough to make a movie with. The last of the season-ending episode of House was shot on this digital SLR camera using good microphones. They probably recorded audio separately, I would guess, but you could use good microphones with this. It shoots true high def as opposed to this kind of upscaled high def that these little devices do. And you know, frankly, we were talking yesterday about the Canon SD95, which is a little point-and-shoot. Great, it shoots great video. A lot of these point-and-shoots now shoot really superb video. Larry, the high-tech redneck from Georgia. It's good to talk to you again, Larry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, big man. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you.
How
is your... Now, the last time we talked, you had that great wireless TV thing, and I finally figured out that it was that new... connection, the high-speed connection, but that they call, what do they call it, USB wideband or something like that?
Right.
But that's limited distance, right? You can't get too far from the... He was using it to broadcast from his laptop to his TV set.
I'm only about 6 or 8 feet from the receiver.
I'm watching
you now on the big screen.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And
That's that V-beam, right?
Yeah, and look, I listened in on This Week in Tech, and I heard a good joke. About USB, trying to make...
I was making a little fun of you, Larry. I hope you don't mind.
Not at all.
Well, you're a very good-natured guy, and I thank you. I think when you call yourself the high-tech redneck, you kind of know that you're kind of having some fun yourself, aren't you?
You got that right. And look... Gina was going to be your East Coast Bureau.
You could be my Georgia Bureau.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's a deal. You got it.
Yeah, I've already got Skype on my other laptop over here with the microphone and the camera and everything. We could just do a remote.
Well, Larry, would you send me your Skype handle? We will do that. Whereabouts in Georgia are you?
I'm about 50 miles below Atlanta, about halfway between Macon and Atlanta.
I bet it's gorgeous.
It is. I live out in the country about 3 miles out of Jackson, Georgia.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I got a big field over here with hay in it.
Well, Larry, always good to talk to you. Did you have a question for me today?
Yeah, I tried that Chrome body browser.
Well, hold on a second. We're going to talk about that. That's good. I'd like to hear more about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You stay here now. Leo Laporte,
The Tech Guy. Happy holidays from all of us at Tech Guy Labs. The website is techguylabs.com. You'll find links there to our chat room, show notes, our video, our podcasts. It's all there. All the other websites, too. This is episode 728. In a continuing series as we try to make sense out of this wild world of technology. Thank goodness there's people like Larry, the high-tech redneck out there.
Wow.
Thanks for hanging on, Larry.
Hanging, yeah. And don't forget about it. Merry Christmas, okay?
Thank you, sir. Merry Christmas to you and a happy 2011.
There you go. Like you
I hope 2011 is a little bit better year than 2010 was.
Yeah. I enjoy your shows.
Well, thank you. Do you do a show yourself? Seems like you oughta.
I think I'm going to try to do it. I might do it right here in the reclining chair. You know, you can't.
I think you should call it Get Her Done.
Oh, well, Larry the Cable Guy might not like that. Larry the Redneck.
I like High Tech Redneck. That's good. I think that's real good.
That sounds like something Rick and Bubba would say.
It does, doesn't it? Now, you should call Rick and Bubba. You know, Rick and Bubba need you to be their tech guy. I've done their show, but I think you'd be better.
Yeah, I watch them every morning. I call them every once in a while. And
oh, good.
Helmsley's is doing it now, and he does a pretty good job.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I think Bubba's, I can't remember if it's Rick or Bubba. I think Bubba's really into tech.
He is, yeah. He's the one who started on Ustream. You know, they're on Ustream every morning now for 4 hours.
I think almost every radio show now in existence is doing this, and I, of course, I started it many, many moons ago before it was very common, but I think everybody now broadcasts, which is funny because there really is radio shows are not that visual by definition.
That's true. Radio here in Jackson, WJGA, they do the broadcast of the high school football. Well, they're doing the Ustream there for the football game.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah, they just.
This is a we're really seeing a transformation. And if I were in the television business, I'd be terrified right now. I really would be.
I would be too.
Everybody's doing it. You know, you don't need to be. You don't need a big studio anymore. This is what happened to the music industry.
Anybody
could do it.
Love it.
So before we got to run here. So you I see you have a question on the board. You want to turn your existing TV into a 3D TV?
Well, my Mitsubishi big screen is a 3D TV.
Oh, okay.
So what do I do to turn it into 3D?
You need 3D content. So now, I don't know if that Mitsubishi is a modern 3D TV. If it is, then you need 3D content. That means a special Blu-ray player. They have 3D Blu-ray players. Now I'm starting to see cable companies, satellite companies say we're going to do 3D channels. So you need, you need 3D content. Same as it was with HD. And of course, the difference on 3D is not only do you need a 3D device, 3D content, you also need 3D glasses. So make sure you have the glasses that work with that Mitsubishi. And by the way, this is another thing, is every TV seems to use a different technology. So you got to get the glasses that go with your TV. You know, that's important. Larry, great to talk to you. Stay in touch. Now, coming up, Linda in Santa Rosa. She's got two antivirus programs. You're only supposed to have one. We'll talk about which one's the best in just a second. Before we do that, though, I want to talk about backing up your data. It is here. You know, the cold weather, the freezing temperatures, the freezing rain, the freezing computers. I know computers freeze up or crash regardless of the temperature, but your next computer disaster, your next freeze-up could happen anytime. And, you know, with all those holiday pictures on there, all of those great memories, all the data, all the financial records, all the email, can you afford to lose files on your computer? I think how you'd feel if they vanished. You would be upset, wouldn't you? That's why you got to have a backup plan. And any good backup plan has to be automatic, so you don't have to remember. That's important. And in my opinion, it should be off-site as well as, you know, it's okay to back up locally, but you got to have something off-site in case the worst happens, fire, flood, or tornado, earthquake, somebody breaks in, steals everything. Then what do? You use Carbonite. It's automatic. It's always available no matter where you are, and it's safe in the cloud, encrypted, so it's protected, and it's very affordable. $55 a year backs up all your personal data on your internal drive, no matter how many gigabytes it is.
Mac or PC, I want you to try Carbonite Free right now. Go to carbonite.com, and you can start your 15-day trial absolutely free. You don't even need a credit card if you use the offer code Leo. And then, if you decide to buy, and I know you will, you get 2 months free if you use my name, Leo. You got to back it up to get it back. Please do me a favor. Do back up. And if you want to do it right, do it automatically. Do it in the cloud. Do it with Carbonite. Carbonite.com, offer code Leo. Linda Santa Rosa, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Leo. You're a popular guy.
It's hard to get through, I know, but I appreciate your patience. Thank you.
Yes, I just got a new computer, and I'm trying to decide if I'm going to put Norton 360. I've got a two-month free thing from Norton.
Which... No, no.
Oh, you don't like it?
I hate it. Well, now, I have to say, the plain old Norton antivirus has gotten much better. It used to be really a bloated pig of a program, but they've listened to me and a lot of other people who've really bitterly complained, and they've stripped it down. The problem is Norton 360, by, as its name implies, is not just the antivirus. It's a ton of stuff, and it's bloatware. It's more than you need. Of course, you get the impression, well, 360 degree, I must have absolutely great protection. I think it's overkill. It causes problems. Programs stop working. A lot of people who call me up and say, my internet's not working, I just say, well, are you using Norton? And they say, yes. And I say, well, take it off.
All right.
So I you haven't paid for it. Yes, it comes for free. There's a reason it comes for free. Norton does deals with a lot of manufacturers. McAfee does too. And in my opinion, neither Norton nor McAfee, the two market leaders, are very good.
You don't like McAfee either, okay?
No.
Okay, well, the Norton 360 was, I don't know what Norton came with the computer, but that I'm using that for the last week. But, well, what should I buy then? I also had brought, and I haven't opened any of these yet.
You only need one. First of all, you can only use one. Antiviruses will conflict. You get pretty good free protection from Microsoft right now with a Microsoft Security Essentials. That's Microsoft.com/Security Essentials. It's free. And that's the minimum. If you want kind of even more elaborate protection, and I think, I should say a disclaimer here, this is a sponsor. They're a sponsor because I've recommended them for years, even before they were an advertiser, and I continue to recommend them. I'd like Nod32 from ESET, ESET.com.
I heard you talking about that.
And the reason I really like it is besides it being very, very effective, it's not bloatware. It does not slow your system down at all.
And it's called Nod32.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird name.
I know. It means no open door. Yeah. I heard you say it earlier.
Oh, you're good. That's good. It actually doesn't. It's a Czechoslovakian. It means something in Czechoslovakian. Because the original author is Czech, and it came from the Czech Republic. But now, you might as well say it, no open doors. I think they're a very, very good company, and they're very committed to security, and they do a superb job. But many people say, no, I'm not going to pay for an antivirus. That's fine. Microsoft Security Essentials if you're a cheapskate.
I'm a cheapskate, but .com Security Essentials.
Yeah, at least do that. And then if you what's $30 a year? Believe me, if you get a bug on your computer, you will wish, you will say, I'll pay $1,000 not to have that because it's such a pain.
But do I need to go to the store and get it? It's best to
No. Go to ESET.com/Leo. You do not have to have a disk for either Microsoft Security Essentials or Nod32. You can download and install.
Okay.
But if you have installed Norton,
huh?
And it sounds like you have.
Install it.
Run the uninstaller, but before you do anything else, go to Symantec, which is the parent company, and you can Google this Norton uninstaller. Their uninstaller is not as complete as it ought to be, and they have an additional free download that you can run that will get rid of all the traces of 360, and I think you really want to do that.
Okay. And also, can I ask you, I heard about a thing called Sandbar, but I think it's more for corporate use. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, there are a number of high-end antivirus solutions that are designed for corporate environments where you're protecting a lot of computers. In fact, McAfee and Norton both make, I think, very good corporate solutions. Ironically, their business solutions are better than their consumer solutions, partly because the people who are installing them are professionals, and they're not going to put up with that bloatware stuff.
Okay.
So, but you don't need it. No, if you have either Microsoft Security Essentials or NOD 32, that's all you need to do. Now, there are other things that are more important than any software. It's your behavior.
Okay. What?
You got to make sure you run Windows Update and update religiously. Please make sure your other software is updated and don't accept files from strangers. That's the most important thing of all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme. I'm sorry, did I scare you? For high-speed internet at an amazing price, call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. Another hour of high-tech talk. Questions and answers, thoughts, and so forth. Dan's calling from Israel. Let's get to Dan. He's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am great. So nice to have a call from Israel.
Well, nice to finally be able to get through.
It's not easy, I know. Are you on Skype?
I'm on Skype on my Nexus One.
Oh, wow. It sounds great. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That's great.
Works pretty well.
So what can I do for you today?
Well, I have a couple of comments and a question.
Excellent. Fire away.
Okay, the first comment is, I'm a few weeks behind on the podcast, and I was listening to Show 716 today, and you had a caller who wanted to know about finding things on an iPod or something like that, on an iPhone.
Oh, yeah. His idea was, and this is kind of cool, he wanted to have, I mean, this would work for appraiser, for real estate. One of our callers who asked this question was a contractor. He wanted to put together his bids and have the client sign the bid right there on either the computer or something like that. What's your suggestion?
Right. Well, you were wondering about the legality of it.
Yeah.
And just think when the last time you actually signed a credit card receipt on paper was.
Well, that's a good point. We do it all the time, right, on those digital machines. So, that's really a question of whether the credit card company accepts that. I guess you're legally bound. I mean, you can buy something on a credit card without signing anything at all. We do it all the time on the internet.
Sure enough.
Sure. I don't know what, and of course, when you, nowadays with the FedEx and UPS, you sign those little, you know, doohickeys that they carry around, those count as signatures. But I don't know I don't know what the courts would say if it would be a legally binding contract. If I presented you with a contract on a computer screen and I said, here's a pen, sign the trackpad, and it showed up as a drawing of your signature on the screen, I don't know if that's legally binding or not. And I don't even know if the courts have even said. There's certainly a number of companies, Microsoft's tried to do this, who try to create digital signatures. But I don't think there's any accepted standard for that yet.
Right. Okay. Well, that was the one comment.
Okay.
The other one is you get a lot of kids that call and ask you how to get into programming.
Yes.
And one thing that you can send them to nowadays is Google's App Inventor for Android.
Yeah. Isn't that great? I'm glad they've opened that up. It's really – have you played with it?
I played with it. I'm a C developer. I do embedded systems in C.
Mm-hmm.
I did it today for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I wrote this great little app that will send an SMS with your location and address.
Wow, that's so cool. You wrote that in a couple of hours?
In a couple of hours.
Now, and there's no code in it. Now, you know C code, you know C++, but there's no code in this, right? It's all just drag and drop.
No, there's no code, and that's why it's great for beginners, because they get to learn how to do the flow, which is the important part.
Right. Right. And that coding is easy. That's just typing. It's learning how to design a program that's tricky and tough. Yeah, how to think about it. So this is at appinventor.googlelabs.com, and Google has now opened this up to anybody who wants to play with it. And it, what it does is it creates an app for Android phones, like your Nexus One.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that those are my two comments. And the question is, my cats have scratched my flat screen.
No!
Not to mention the kids' handprints, but that's the...
Oh, no! What kind of screen is it?
It's an LCD. It's a Samsung LCD.
And when you say scratched, have they scratched it sufficiently to break the liquid crystal pouches there, or is it just on the surface, the plastic surface of the screen?
Surface scratch.
Okay.
Scratch.
I bet you can buff it out. Now, you'd want to be careful doing this because what you don't want to create is more scratches. I have no idea. That's a very interesting question, Dan. Cat scratched screens, Ted Nugent style, as they say. I don't know. I don't know exactly. You could probably, you know, wax it maybe with a polish. You know, that might help. I do not know, and I don't want you to do anything, Dan, based on what Leo says, because I don't want you to ruin your screen worse than it is. How visible is it?
It depends on what's showing. Right. When there's a lot of light on the screen, like right now, I've got the Ravens Saints game on, and I can't see the scratches. But if there's black behind it, then it's very
right. Bright. Yeah, Gordon Medley in our chat room says use the cat to buff it out. Obviously, not a cat lover, Gordon. Although after a cat scratches your screen, it's probably very tempting. Not recommended. I think you probably cannot replace that plastic coating. I would be very careful about doing anything that would make it worse. So I would guess that you're probably kind of stuck with what you got.
That's what I figured, but I thought I might ask.
Well, it's worth asking, and the chat room is brilliant, and maybe somebody in there will know, or somebody will call and make a suggestion. I suspect that there are products that purport to do this. I'd be very cautious about what I'd do on that. Very interesting. Hey, Dan, it's so nice to have you listening from Israel. That's wonderful. And I know Hanukkah's over, but have a happy holiday. Enjoy the holiday season. And keep listening. He probably listens to the podcast. You might watch on the internet. We do make it available worldwide via the internet. You can find out more about that at techguylabs.com. Carmen, Oakland, California. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Carmen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. We finally just purchased a plasma TV from, we were switching over from a tube TV. And we're waiting for it to be delivered. What I don't know is what kind of HD TV service to get. I don't know if I get UVerse or Comcast or DirecTV. We are not big gamers, although we did just buy for our kids, they don't know this yet, a Kinect Xbox.
Oh, you're going to have so much.
They're young.
You're going to have so much. Well, now, the first thing is, by the way, that Xbox is really a great set-top box. You can watch Netflix on it, which is great. If you don't have a Netflix account, you might want to look at the $7.99 streaming-only account. But since you have a nice high-def screen, my suggestion is the very first thing you should do is get a Blu-ray player. Do you have a Blu-ray player?
We just bought one of those as well. We're getting the whole package delivered in a couple of days.
Oh, you are, Carmen, you're going to just jump for joy. So are your kids. You won't believe how much better this looks, and especially with Blu-ray. Now, as far as, you know, broadcast signals, you're in Oakland, so you could get an antenna, and the local stations broadcast in high def, and that's actually the highest quality high def of all. It's better than anything on cable or satellite because it's less compressed.
Okay.
So I wouldn't mind, if I were you, I would suggest setting up an antenna at least for, you know, your locals. And, you know, when the Oscars are on or the Super Bowl's on, you're going to be watching in high def on those locals. It's actually going to look better than it would on your cable company or your satellite company.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. I think Comcast in your area, which is close to my area, I think Comcast probably has the highest quality signal. It's got the most bandwidth. You versus using your phone lines, which is not as, you know, high bandwidth. A satellite is constrained as well. So I would say, in general, cable would be the best choice.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. And can I ask you a completely unrelated question? Do you have time for
Certainly.
That?
Certainly. Yeah.
Okay. In terms of backing up, we have many Macs in our house, laptop and desktop, and I'm finally getting around to doing the backup stuff. So I'm
Yay.
Wondering if we have Time Capsule and I think it's Time Machine or whatever, do we also need a cloud system as well?
Let me talk about that when I come back. You don't have to hang on, but I'll take your answer on the air. I'll be right back to talk about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, and a good conversation in the chat room. We were talking to Carmen in Oakland. It asked a great question. So I got a new high-def TV. How do I get my TV? And, of course, it depends geographically. UVerse is available to her. I think because she's in Oakland, I don't think UVerse is fiber in that area. So UVerse can be, the way AT&T does UVerse, I think varies depending geographically. It can be fiber, can be DSL, I believe. I wish these companies or somebody would actually kind of do a white paper explaining, here's what we're doing. Because they don't really want you to, I mean, they don't put that on their consumer-based webpage. They don't really want to talk about it. I think, but I'm not sure. I would think in Oakland that Comcast, the cable company, would be the best. But it really is going to depend on how they're doing it. If you can get fiber to your home, you bet that'd be a good choice. That's going to be the highest bandwidth into the home. But then there's a lot of other variables. You know, what kind of television they're providing and how much compression they're providing. It's my general understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that the best HD available is Blu-ray. The next best is broadcast over the air high def. That's the least compressed. You know, high def doesn't really specify how compressed it is or how good it looks. It's merely the number of lines of resolution. And that could be 720 or 1080 lines of resolution. And it can be highly compressed. So even, you know, even a lot of lines of resolution can look terrible if it's very, very compressed. So it's hard to say, here's the general rule of thumb, but generally I'd say Blu-ray, which is uncompressed or as little compressed as possible, 1080 progressive, very high quality video. The next best broadcast HD, and then probably fiber. If you got fiber to the curb, that probably give you the best. The truth is, you've got plenty of bandwidth, even on DSL, if you're not heavily compressing the video. So it's really going to depend on what they're doing to the content before it gets to you. 8888 Ask Leo. So in other words, I don't know. You're going to have to check with your local authority and try to piece it all together. A chat room's a great place to go because there are people from all over the world in the chat room, and you can ask, you know, hey, I'm in Tampa, Florida. What, anybody from Tampa here, what do you use? What do you recommend? We got almost 1,000 people in there. Lorna, Palo Alto, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Did I push the button? I did. Lorna, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Hi, Lorna. Welcome to the show.
I listen to your and I don't understand.
I get that from time to time. It's foreign language programming, but it'll soak in.
I know. That's why I listen.
You're breaking up a little bit, Laura. Lorna, I don't know if you're if it's
really
if it's
understand what I'm doing.
But yeah.
Now I have a question.
Okay.
Is that we are building a house and we get to start from scratch? And maybe you just answered the question, and I still didn't get it. But we get to decide between. Comcast, well, we get to decide everything, but we had Comcast before, and they were totally nutsy in their billing system. In fact, we had to call all the time to get them to even bill us. And
that's pretty bad. That's not a well-run business.
No. And we have fax and TV and internet, and we have iPhone. we're trying to decide whether we should put Comcast in. We need real reliability, or that whatever the AT&T.
U-verse, they call it, yeah. I have I have to say, I have Comcast at home, and I'm in Northern California as well. I'm in Petaluma, which is up north of San Francisco, and I haven't had any problems with Comcast. I do. I have to say, their customer support is terrible, because if you call, you get transferred to a call center, I think it's in India, where they really can't do anything. And then they have, you know, I spent half an hour on the line with them. And finally, the bottom line was, well, you need to go on the website. It's like, well, I wish you'd told me that before I spent half an hour on hold. So I admit their customer support leaves a lot to be desired. On the other hand, the service has been pretty reliable. I don't have any experience with AT&T's U-verse. I have to say, big companies like AT&T and Comcast are not notorious for good customer support in any case. What I would do best, and so in other words, I don't know what the answer is for your neck of the woods, but you probably, if you asked the neighbors. And say, hey, you know, how reliable has it been? The reason I say that is Comcast Palo Alto is not the same as Comcast Petaluma. It's not the same as Comcast Minneapolis. It's not the same as Comcast Miami. Every cable company's regional offices have considerable control over how they do things. Yeah, of course, there's the national Comcast headquartered in Philadelphia, and then, you know, they control a lot of it. But the regional cable operator is king, and they are the ones who decide how much bandwidth, how to wire it. Whether they're reliable or not varies considerably. You know, they're good in some areas, bad in other areas. So you really do need to kind of ask the neighborhood and say, well, have they been reliable? What's their up? Have they been up a lot? Or they've been down a lot? That kind of thing.
So what you said about fiber, because Palo Alto tends to be pretty progressive, you know, we're
good. Yeah, I'm sure, because Palo Alto is where Mark Zuckerberg, Steve Jobs, and everybody in the tech industry live. I bet you you've got the best of whatever it is.
Yeah. And fiber to the curb is where it was kind of invented down here.
Well, then if you've got that as a choice, generally speaking, that's the best. But again, it could be the provider is unreliable, and, you know, they don't. The technology is very good. I'd recommend the technology, but whether the provider keeps up with the technology is a question mark. I don't know.
What about,
you know, where you can go? There's a website, dslreports.com. where people report in on their experience with their internet service provider. I would send you there, but I would also give you a little word of warning that, of course, the loudest people are the ones who are dissatisfied.
Okay.
So you're going to always see, anytime you go on the internet, you're going to always see complaints about everybody. You kind of have to weigh it with a grain of salt.
Okay. Does it matter that we have iPhones?
No, because ultimately that's going to be based on your Wi-Fi, and your iPhone isn't very demanding. It's really your TV and your high-speed internet in your house wired that's going to really be the most demanding.
Okay, all right. And
the iPhone will be fine. It's not it's not nearly as demanding, so it'll be fine no matter what.
Not bundled in. That won't.
No, it's not related.
Okay.
No, I don't think AT&T. You know, the truth is, most of the time these bundles, you get, you know, telephone service, television service, and data service, you don't get much of a break anyway.
Okay. And then one last question, since we're having all of these storms, like AT&T doesn't provide, I mean, Comcast, if you had a storm, does that mean your whole phone service goes out?
Yeah, that's true. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Backup done right. Automatic, off-site. You got to get this thing. Go to Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo to try it free for 2 weeks. Carbonite.com. And actually, I didn't get around to answering Carmen's question a couple of calls ago. Carmen asked, I've got backup. I've got Time Machine backing up all my Macs. In fact, she's got the centralized Time Machine, which is great. So she's got, what do they call it? It's a time capsule. It's a Wi-Fi base station that has a hard drive in it. It's kind of pricey, but Apple sells it with a hard drive in it. And that's central. It's like a network-attached storage hard drive that can back up via a Time Machine all the computers. That's great. And then she said, but is that enough? And she asked the right question, because now everything, all the backup is in one location. It's all on site. And that is risky. I'll point to my friend Peter Krogh. He's a great photographer and an expert on asset management. In fact, he wrote the DAM book, the Digital Asset Management book. It's for photographers primarily, but it's the same problem no matter what your data is, whether it's pictures or email or movies or music or whatever it is. It's the same issue. How do I safely back up my stuff? Now, imagine you're a professional photographer. You just shot a wedding. You've got something priceless, which is pictures of that wedding. This cannot be recreated. If you lose it, your name is mud. You know, you got one angry bridezilla at your throat. So for photographers, it's absolutely vital that they never risk data. Plus, there you have an additional problem, which is they're modifying this data. I mean, you might be working on those pictures. What if you ruin a whole batch of pictures somehow? You got to make sure that you can, you know, go back to the originals. So this becomes a big issue for photographers. So I pay attention to what Peter says and what photographers say. He created a website, very good website, called dpbestflow.org, digitalphotographybestflow.org, flow as in workflow. It did it with the Library of Congress and the Association of Professional Photographers, ASMP. So that's a good site to know about if you're a photographer, dpbestflow.org. But on there, they have a page on backup. They call it, Peter calls it his 3-2-1 backup strategy. And as far as I'm concerned, this is it. It's definitive. It's the bottom line. Say no more. Say no more. Here it is. 3 copies of everything. You have to say that, because sometimes people say, oh, I backed up my data. Now I can erase the original. Well, you don't have a backup anymore. You got one copy. That's not a backup. You got to have 3. He says 2 of those have to be on different media. That's important. If you put everything on CDs, and what if those CDs decay or rot? You don't have it on another medium? Oh, now you don't have a backup. So 3 copies, 2 of them on different forms of media, hard drive and CD, for instance. But one of them, it needs to be off-site. And that's really important, because so Carmen's got everything backed up. It's all in the house. But if the house burns down, that's it. You're gone. Because you don't have backups anywhere else. You might say, well, how likely is that? Ah, well, I have a friend, a novelist. I won't say her name. She's a very well-known novelist. Lived in the Oakland Hills near you, Carmen. You remember about 15 years ago, pretty big fire. Destroyed many, many homes, including hers. She had her novel on her computer. She had a backup, but the fire burned the whole thing. She lost the novel. She lost the whole novel, and there was no backup anywhere. That's why you got to have offsite backup. So that's why I mentioned Carbonite. That's one way of doing it, but there are many ways of doing it. You know, you could buy another time capsule and every Sunday unplug the one of them, put the new one in, bring the other one to work. That's offsite. That counts. As long as it's not in the same physical location. My friend Steve Gibson, a hard drive wizard, emails DVDs to his mother. He says, Mom, don't worry about what these are. Just put them safely. I'll probably never ask you for them, but you know, that's a good way to do it. The key is off-site. And so, yes, the answer, Carmen, that's the long answer. The short answer is yes, you do need one more step in your backup process, which is an off-site backup solution. And that could be as simple as just swapping your time machine. In a way, your time capsule. In a way, I kind of like the idea of not using a time capsule, but using... I have duplicate network attached storages, and I swap them out. I also upload to Carbonite, so believe me, 3-2-1 is the minimum. I have probably 5 copies of everything, off site, online, in different locales, at home and at work. And the nice thing is, you never really have to worry about losing data. You never will. Going back to our call from Palo Alto about And actually, Carmen asked the same thing, and it's a great question to which there is really no right answer, which is what's the best internet, TV, phone connection? And our caller, and I kind of ran out of time, but our caller asked a very important point. We're having storms. Is it safe to have my cable company provide phone, internet, and TV? Well, if the cable goes out, you've lost all three. So I think there's something to be said for diversity. So not putting all your eggs in one basket. Using the phone. You know, historically, the phone company in your area, whatever it is, Verizon or AT&T or whatever the company is, historically, from the very earliest days of telephony, the FCC, the government, and these heavily regulated companies have focused on reliability. So I have to say there's a lot to be said for the plain old phone service. It works even if the power goes out, for instance. If you don't have a powered phone, now you got to make sure you have a phone that you don't plug into the wall. You know, one of those old style phones you plug it into the phone jack, but you don't plug it into the power outlet. If you have one of those old style phones, even if your power's out, your phone will work. Now, if you have phone from your cable company, the way they handle that is they put a big old battery backup in your garage. There's a battery. So the power goes out, the phone still works. As long as that battery works, do they come out every year and check it? Do they replace it every couple of years? I hope so, because otherwise, you know, when I had phone service from my cable company, I had a battery in the garage. They never checked it. I'm sure after 2 years it was useless. So I think it's a good idea to have a little diversity. You know, here at the Twit Cottage at the Tech Guy Labs, where we broadcast, you know, I'm doing it right now from a little cottage. It's stormy outside. I have, I don't know, 5-6 different internet connections. Of course, I have DSL Extreme, but I also have 2 Comcast cable modems, DOCSIS 3, which is their top of the line cable modems. I have a T1 from COVAD. I have an ISDN line from AT&T. That's what I'm talking to you on right now. I guess I have 6 because I also have from Sonic.net, another internet service provider in the Bay Area. I have something called Ethernet to the First Mile, which is the highest speed connection in the house. So that's 6 different ways I can get online. And if any 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 of them fail, I'm not off the air. And that's kind of the key to all of this. Redundancy is good. Just like backup, isn't it? The more copies you have, the less likely you're going to lose your data. Pat's in Houston, Texas, I assume. Hi, Pat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Should I congratulate you for 2 weeks vacation? You must have run for Congress or something.
I only missed one show. Well, only missed one show because I was in Paris for Le Web. Now, I am going to miss some shows this Saturday and Sunday, you know, for the holiday. But I'll be back.
Anyway, we've talked before. I'm the guy that called up. I'm in a wheelchair, and I called up because I never had a laptop because I thought they were too big, and I was thinking about an iPad.
iPad would be a great choice for you.
I got the iPad, and I love it. And I'm supposed to give you a review on that, but that's not why I called. I can do that.
Well, you just did. I love it. That's good. That's a good review. Thank you.
Anyway, why I called, I don't wear a watch because the batteries ran out and some of the straps are broken. I got a lot of watches. And then I thought, well, I'm carrying a cell phone, and it tells me the time on the...
Nobody wears watches anymore. If you wear watches, it's because you like the jewelry, because you're right. Everybody has a phone with a big display. It tells you exactly what time it is. In fact, it's more accurate, isn't it, because it's updated by the network.
The deal is you have to pull it out and look at it and all that, but I'm...
Right.
Why in the world can't you do that through your Bluetooth? You tap the button, you say, what time is it? And the little voice tells you what time it is.
Well, that's a great idea. You know, I think you can on some Bluetooth, and I'll tell you how in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. For the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. A few more minutes before we wrap this puppy up. Pat had a... Oh, actually, though, we are going to keep the calls going. That's right. Thank you, Louise, for reminding me. Luis Oliveira at the controls there reminds me that we are recording ahead for holiday shows. And you can call in, and we'll be taking calls for another 45 minutes or so. So 888-ASK-LEO works for the next hour. 888-827-5536. Pat asked a good question. How can I get my Bluetooth headset to find out what time it is? Because the phone knows. Well, it depends on the phone's voice command capabilities. I know somebody in the chat room said Windows Phone 7, you can ask it what time it is. It will tell you. So if you have a Bluetooth handset, and most of these do, or earpiece, I should say, and most of these do, that you press the button and then it launches the voice command on the phone. If your phone's voice command includes what time is it, it'll tell you. So it's really not a function of the Bluetooth, but a function of the phone. I don't think iPhones do that. I didn't know Windows Phone 7 does it. That's pretty cool. So check the voice commands in your phone and see if you can ask your phone what time it is. I use I'm very happy with a Blue Ant. I think it's called the T1. They have a number of good Bluetooth headsets. I like the headsets that you don't have to read the manual because if you press the button, the headset tells you what to do. I like that. I also like headsets that announce the caller, that can download the phone book and announce the caller, and the Blue Ant can do that. Yeah, so Hip says, I just asked the iPhone what time it is. It gave me a blank look. Oh, Windows 6.5 does it. I'm sorry, not Windows 7. Windows Phone 6.5. All right. Back to the phones we go. Mike in Buffalo, New York. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. Love your show and all your shows on the Twit Network.
Thank you. I want to take it back. Rodney says iPhone 4 voice commands do allow you to ask what time it is. Thank you. So your headset, if it can communicate with the voice commands on your phone, it will work. Go ahead, Rodney. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike. Rodney was in the chat room.
Yeah, ever since Steve Jobs said no flash on your devices, many people started creating or changing their websites because people would just see a blank screen when they.
That's right.
On their devices, and I was wondering if I'm creating a website and I wanted it, you know, those special effects or, you know, transitions or stuff like what Apple even does on their website. But with like that slideshow that they have on,
right.
Like, what are they using other than Flash? Because that's all I really know, and have no idea what other tools would be necessary to create something that would be a non-Flash.
Most of the time, they're using JavaScript. There are a number of really good JavaScript libraries that will give you animation capabilities. jQuery is one. Node.js is another. It depends on the effect you want. If you want video, a lot of times you can put video on a page without Flash. This is what YouTube does, by just embedding an H.264 movie on there. And the new HTML5 specification, which is really what Apple's pushing people in the direction of. Apple, the reason, you know, Apple has a lot of reasons for not supporting Flash. It takes a lot of battery. It takes a lot of CPU. It's not very efficient. It's got security issues. But chiefly, it's not accessible and it's not a standard. It's something owned by one company, by Adobe. So if at all possible on the World Wide Web, we'd like to do stuff that is not owned by any one company, that's an open standard that anybody can use. You don't have to have Flash, and it'll work on any browser. And that's what HTML5, that's the idea anyway behind HTML5. So there are capabilities built into HTML5 that allow you to do almost anything Flash can do. But in many cases, for instance, on the Apple site, I don't think they're using HTML5 commands. They're just using JavaScript, probably using a jQuery or Node.js to give it animation. In many cases, just, you know, an animated image, like an animated GIF would work as well. So how do you do it if you don't know how to program? Well, it's a little tricky, to be honest. That's why I like these libraries, jQuery and Node.js. You still need to write in JavaScript, but they handle a lot of the complexity kind of behind the scenes for you. You may also find that your internet service provider, or your web host, I should say, has ways to do this that are a little bit simpler. But frankly, it's advanced. It's advanced web programming. And more and more, to be honest, more and more, I think that, and this is unfortunate, the casual average day-to-day web user isn't really going to get to do all that stuff unless they have somebody like Squarespace or a web hosting company that provides you with, you know, simple push-button ways to do that. What time is it? Does work on the iPhone, says Hip. Thank you for correcting yourself. And I was just looking at voice commands on Android. I'm pretty sure you could say, what time is it? That's pretty cool, isn't it? So that's your answer, Mike, which is you can do it, but you got to learn how, and it's going to take some programming. Harley in Banning. Oh, wait, before I get to you, Harley, I want to mention, is it Carbonite, Luis, I want to mention? Yeah. Carbonite's such a great company. I had dinner a few months ago with David Friend, the CEO of Carbonite. We just hit it off like gangbusters. He is a geek from way back, from MIT. His first company was a synthesizer company you may have heard of called ARP that everybody in rock and roll used. Just brilliant stuff. This is kind of a second life for him, this Carbonite, because it all started when his daughter was in college and lost a very important paper, and she didn't have a backup. And as a geek, he said, boy, there sure ought to be a better way. So he created Carbonite. Now we're years down the road, and Carbonite has become better and better and better. It's now Mac as well as PC. It is efficient. It is off-site encrypted backup. You put it on your Mac or your PC, and boom, it just starts backing up. Whenever you're not using your system, whenever you're online, it'll back up your data, and it'll keep it backed up. And here's the best part. You can get that data back anytime from any computer, even from a free iPhone app or a BlackBerry app, just by logging into your Carbonite account. There's your data. It's safe. It's encrypted. It's protected. It's always available, no matter what happens. You've got to have a backup plan. You know that. I say it all the time. And absolutely, it has to include offsite backup. My suggestion, Carbonite.com. Try it free for 2 weeks. Go to Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. And if you decide to buy, use Leo again, and you'll get 2 months free. Carbonite is still very affordable, no matter what. $55 a year for unlimited backup. All the data on your internal drive. That's great. I put it on my daughter's computer when she went off to college, so the same thing wouldn't happen to her. Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo. Try it right now. Absolutely free. Carbonite. .com. Harley in Banning, California. You're next, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, hi. My name is Charlie, but that's okay.
Well, you make hi, sense. Charlie. I guess they left the C off.
That's okay. I've been called worse than Arlie. My reason for calling is to try and make this old guy with gray hair a little smarter about music and such. This started because my wife and I both exercise. She wanted something that she could listen to music with, ergo an MP3 player. Then okay. I got a little bit, I don't know what, trying to think that maybe a Nano or an iPod Touch might be okay. The iPod Touch would enable us to do various things, like maybe get on the internet, play
music. Oh, yeah,
music.
The Touch is amazing because it's basically an iPhone without the phone part. I mean, it's a computer.
Exactly. So the difference between a decent MP3 player at about $50, then you go to a Nano where you can get it refurbished from the Apple store for like $99. Then I'm thinking to the next dimension, maybe when we travel, we could use the iPod so that maybe we could check emails. We can get that for like $2.25 from the iPod
right.
refurbished store.
Right.
Help me understand if I'm going in the right direction.
I think you are. You're adding capabilities. They're costing more, but as you add capabilities, you add to price. I mean, you can keep on going if you want. You can also use an iPad. An iPad is an iPod.
Don't forget, I said I am an old guy with gray hair, and I live in a senior community, so I don't want to go into warp speed.
Well, believe it or not, a lot of seniors are using iPads very effectively. I gave one to my my mom. She's 77. She wouldn't live without it. Yeah. I gave one to my father-in-law. He's nearly 80. He adores it.
I understand.
So, It's not any more challenging than, say, an iPod Touch. It's just basically an iPod Touch with a big screen.
Right. But for using it for portability, the Touch would probably be
I think Touch is a great choice. What I would do, though, first is look at one and make sure that the size of the screen doesn't become an eye strain problem.
Right. Okay.
Because it is a small screen, As I'm gray-haired also, as we get to those gray years, it's a little harder to read that stuff. Now, it's good because you can pinch zoom in and you can zoom in. You can certainly make the text bigger on it. But I think that the touch would be a great way to go, Harley. A really great way to go.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your input, and I think maybe that might be the way we're going to go because it will enable us to get into the next level of technology.
That's it. You're into the modern world. Hey, thanks, Harley. Thank you all. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week and a happy Christmas.